Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be looking at the year-end bestsellers and the sales for the 12 months of the year. In this episode, we're going to be talking about the top trades sold for 2019. That is all of 2019. We're going to start with the bestsellers list for the year, maybe bounce around to some other data. Joining me for this, as always, is TJ. How you doing, TJ?
Doing pretty well.
Cool. Now, as Diamond is wont to do, they released this prior to the December numbers, which always kind of drives me a little nuts. But, you know, hey, I waited till we got that so I could do some analysis on that or whatever. Because this was another indexed list, which means I was able to actually get solid estimates, and then take that, compare that to the total monthly units, and then see if there were any kind of unreported units in a few cases. Sometimes we've seen some cases where there's a ton of unreported units. In past years, I think DMZ was a really good go-to example for that. And sometimes they just fall below the radar of the top 300 comics list and such. Now, I am, when I do these kinds of aggregates and stuff, limiting it to the top 300 because I've got that going back further. This year, they released the top 500 items. Last year, I think they went to, 2,000 items or something?
Mm-hmm.
So one of the fun parts of the year-end number crunching for me is, one, what the hell did I do last year? And two, how did they release the data differently this year than last year? And previously, not really having a good kind of automated process, I spent some time this year doing that. I didn't get it fully done, so that's why I've got kind of two spreadsheets open. One, which is the standard, what I've used in the past years, that's frankly a real bear to update, and one that was much easier to update. I just haven't vetted if all the numbers actually work out right. But I'm hoping that we can kind of cut over to that over the course of 2020, because some of the things I'm using for it, like when I accumulate, you know, here's all the monthly trade entries for the year. The plan is on the monthly side to do a rolling 12-month kind of a thing, so we can do a look back kind of easily there. Now, if we look at the best seller over the course of 2019, it was Watchmen with 20,908 units. I don't think that is shocking. Between the TV show, between it being Watchmen, that kind of stuff. Matter of fact, it topped the list in December. With a fair amount of sales, I think, 10,000 units or something right there, which is about half of it. And Watchmen's one of those that's been around enough, and they've done a few different editions that it's possible I'm not aggregating all of the numbers of all of the editions, but I'm pretty sure for this that it got what it got. The next thing on the list was Saga, first volume of that, 18,723 units, followed then by Umbrella Academy Volume 1 Apocalypse Suite with 18,596 units. Already I'm seeing a definite trend here of not new material.
Yep.
And I don't think that's particularly problematic, but I also don't think that's a great sign in so much as you can't rely on the old stuff forever. You've got to get some new stuff in there. And we do have some newer material with the Mr. Miracle trade that was released, I believe, originally back in February of 2019. And then the first volume of Die, which was released, I believe, in July of 2019. But definitely the stuff at the very top of the list is more tried and true material. Other stuff we get near the top of the list, Batman, White Knight, Walking Dead, and then a few other things that are more eventish in nature, like Infinity Gauntlet, Dark Knight's Metal, and it's not until we get down to rank 24 that we see House of X, Powers of X. Actually, that was the one that topped the list in December with the 10,000, not Watchmen, my mistake. But, you know, for something to come in at the end of the year, being on the list once and hitting in the top 25, pretty impressive, but not too surprising with House of X, Powers of X, because, man, that thing just did gangbusters, got great word of mouth, did great sales, strong reorder activity on the comic side. Hopefully that's a sign of things to come in terms of 2020 with the X-Men collections and stuff like that. So, I mean, I expect some of this to be, you know, older material like, you know, Watchmen and events and stuff to continue to do well. But it's a little worrisome that we're not seeing some of the newer material higher on the list on some of this. You know, and for everything like a Saga or Infinity Gauntlet or Dark Knight's Metal or something, you know, we should be seeing, I think, some more of the best-selling newer material. But again, that top item from December, which was Powers of X, House of X, with that 10,000 units, that came in at rank 24.
Mm-hmm.
So you can come in late in the game and still place pretty well for the year if you've got strong material.
No, absolutely. And, you know, especially considering that was only available for 1 month, you know, so,
yeah.
You know, it's definitely considering when it came in that high. Now, obviously, we can't guess at what the reorder activity for that will be or if there will be any. I mean, I predict with it being Hickman and him getting on the series and as they expand that line for a decent amount of time, there should be reorder activity as people will go, oh, I like this. I need to kind of read about the beginning of it. Then they can go back to that collection. And, you know, so I would expect it to go, you know, up in sales for sure.
I would expect to see Powers of X or the House of X Powers of X hardcover to be similar to what we tend to see for like an Infinity Gauntlet, a Civil War, any other kind of Marvel event.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't an event in the same way, but I think it will have a similar sales dynamic in terms of if you've got somebody coming into a store, wow, you know, I want to read some X-Men stuff. What's some really good stuff? What's a good jumping on point? It's a great go-to answer.
Oh, yeah. Especially, you know, considering the couple years previous worth of X-Men material have been hit or miss in terms of, you know, pick and choose which ones are good, depending on what creator was on it, depending on if they had a unified vision or theme, you know, the X-Men blue, gold, red, you know, there's good material in there, but there was just, it's almost like you have to sift through it all. Whereas, you know, from a retailer perspective, I absolutely agree with you. If someone is digging the new stuff that's coming out, you know, and as they expand those lines from the one or two books that Hickman was writing, you know, a great place to say, oh, let's start with this, get a good background, and then you can, you know, the six to 12 titles that they're now publishing, you know, you can, you know, expand out from there.
What I'm going to be really curious about to see in 2020 is not just how this does with House of X, Powers of X, but how the various trades of the first issues, the second issues, the third issues do.
Yeah, the way that they organized that was interesting.
Because they're also then doing collections of the first six issues of X-Men, the first six issues of New Mutants, and all that kind of stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious how many people are going to be following it monthly in trade, or how many are going to be just picking and choosing selected titles and getting the trades of those.
Yeah, that will be interesting. And I almost wonder if Hickman went to the Marvel, you know, collection departments, because it is a novel way to collect things. And they said, hey, you know, I'm writing this material in a specific way, and it makes sense to collect it this way. Now, I know you usually collect this other way, but let's, you know, trust in me in that I have a grand overarching plan and it reads best this way. Let's do it this way. So I wonder if he went to bat for that, the way to collect it.
I'm curious if they took a look back in the sales for the various cross-gen titles that they did as trades that way of, what was it, The Forge, The Edge, and a few others,
mm-hmm.
where they did an issue or two of the books each month, and you could just, you know, kind of serialize them that way.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And if they can keep that kind of a thing going for any length of time for the X books, it's really the closest thing we would have to kind of the manga model, where you've got, you know, that phone book sized thing and then different features in it every month and seeing how that goes. Kind of sort of an anthology approach.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, if it's successful, it may lead them to, you know, experimenting more with that and how they publish in general.
Well, then the question is, how successful does it need to be given they've already paid for the material, hopefully with the comic, and they've got the regular set of trades to double dip on?
Yeah, that's a good point. Almost opening up a new format from, you know, collected, you know, trade paperback, hardcover, you know, oversized hardcover, you know, prestige version, omnibus, you know, it creating another version of that, you know.
Yeah, another kind of reprint stream.
Exactly. And especially considering Marvel, if there's a new potential for revenue, they will explore it.
as they should. That's their job.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And not only is it just revenue from them, if it opens it up to a different kind of a reader, I mean, mm-hmm. that's the kind of thing that might do, I would be interested to see how it would do in like an airport kind of a format, because mm-hmm. I could see if you're a frequent traveler and it's, oh, here's the next collection of the next month's worth of, you know, Marvel X-Men titles or something like that, versus, well, you know, if I get this one and I don't like the one story in the trade, I'm kind of out of luck.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So I don't know who they're targeting for that, what they think they're going to get, and how it's going to do. But definitely interesting experiment.
Yeah.
We've got a few other things, some of which are a little surprisingly high up on the list. If we get down to around rank 35 through 37, we've got two volumes of Disney Descendants, Evie's Wicked Runaway, surrounding one of the volumes of The Miraculous Tales of Ladybug and Cat Noir, Season 2. And those did, 8,700 for the first volume of the Disney Descendants, Evie's Wicked Runaway, 8,420 for the second volume of that, and then 8,664 for that Miraculous Ladybug. Hmm. And those are clearly aimed at a bit of a younger audience, but those are solid sales.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And I think that it kind of speaks to the fact that, you know, there are more and more stores that are focusing on that younger reader and what they can sell. And the collected edition is a really solid format for that. And I think that more and more publishers are also going to be putting out stuff. I mean, you see how much DC is committed to those, young readers lines, whatever they want to name the line. That's effectively what it is, a young readers line, where they have these standalone 120 to 180 page stories, oftentimes by crossover writers or artists that we don't see commonly, doing monthly books, kind of like these standalone graphic novels, obviously with, recognizable characters, on the DC side, but obviously, Disney Descendants is a pretty big property on the Disney Channel and all that. And, for the younger crowd, that's kind of like a big draw.
Well, and the Miraculous Ladybug stuff has a strong following and stuff. And I think the other thing that Action Lab did that was pretty smart was the price point there on $8.99.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That makes it very easy to do. And that's volume 4. So it's not like it's just a low cost first volume.
Exactly.
They're and all kind of priced that way.
Yeah. Do you know if they're digest size or like black and white paper, or is it like full size and then they're just pricing it aggressively to get that market?
Full size, full color. It's okay. Basically, what they are is the equivalent, I think, of two issues or two episodes of the cartoon. It's a computer animated cartoon, and they're literally taking that art from the cartoon mm-hmm. and repurposing it as comic book art.
Okay. So that, that's interesting. That may be how they're able to price aggressively like that, is because some of that, the cost of creation is more of someone just putting it into a PDF,
It's all production work versus, artist work, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's certainly not to diminish the production work that this takes, because they've got to. I actually read through one of the issues of the first season of this while, I had the show up on the screen and was just kind of comparing the two. And uh-huh. there was a couple of times where they'd cut a little here or there of, it just either didn't fit on the page or it was superfluous or whatever. But it was a faithful adaptation. So if you're working with a copy of the script and, obviously the source material that you're, just doing screen grabs from and placing them in the right thing, that's something that a trained production person can do, I would think, inside of, I'm going to guess a day or two, but I could be, wildly off on that. So it's not like it's crazy, cost or time intensive.
Mm-hmm.
But it also makes me curious, again, who the target audience of this is, because I remember back in the day when they would do, comic book adaptations, Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade or something like that. That was before most of us had VCRs. It's certainly before, the videotapes of these movies were priced for purchase. They were priced for rental.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to relive the movie or whatever, your best option was to read the comic. Well, here, anyone who's got this comic and they're familiar with the material, odds are has that Netflix account where they can just pop it and watch it there or whatever it's on. I forget if it's on Netflix or somewhere else.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I appreciate them doing that kind of faithful adaptation, but it feels, I don't want to say like a dated approach, but I'm curious who the main target audience is and what the appeal is for them of it. And it may just be that this is a great way to get kids that are enjoying their cartoon starting to read. And if so, that's a huge win, I think, for everybody.
Yeah, that was actually one thing I was going to say. Maybe it's parents looking for material to transition from all that screen time to reading material.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the kid enjoys the reading something that they're familiar with, and then once you've got them into the reading habit, then you can transition to something a little more challenging or something that's not necessarily the just what they see on Disney Channel or Nickelodeon, you know?
Exactly, exactly. Getting them to where they're actually reading and going through the tedious task of flipping pages and stuff versus just sitting on the couch.
The tedious task, I love it.
So, we do have a few other things that I think are aimed a little more at that younger audience. Down at rank 52, we've got the DC Superhero Girls Out of the Bottle. Mm-hmm. We've got a little earlier on the list, we had the Raven, Teen Titans Raven DC Inc. And further down the list, we've got the Under the Moon, a Catwoman tale from DC Inc. As you mentioned, that imprint is faded away in favor of just a generic DC Kids line. It's, again, surprising how quickly they go through branding at some of these companies these days.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, the idea we're changing our strategy or changing, you know, and it's like, well, did you give the other strategy a chance to work? Or, I mean, what, you know, can you evaluate something with 1 month of sales? And it's tough.
I wonder when they do some of these things, if they go in with kind of, this is the benchmark we're going to use to measure it against. And, you know, up front, if it does this well at this point or not this well at this point, we're going to revector and, you know, here's our current game plan, but we'll reassess.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I'm looking at the, really, I guess, what, the top 100-ish or so is all above, you know, 5,000 units, which on the trade side is not bad. The fact that only one thing was above 20,000 units over the course of the year, and that was Watchmen, not great.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that we're seeing a definite shift in what makes up the trade component of a publisher's lineup compared to how it was in the past. I think DC in particular is struggling, trying to establish like the Black Label as the replacement for Vertigo, even if they're just taking a mishmash of different things and saying, ah, well, we're going to consider this a Black Label thing now.
Yeah. I still am confused as to what their overall strategy is, and maybe they are too. Maybe there's, I think it's part of the whole reorganization of how they're trying to figure their leadership situation out, but it's still unclear to me how, if they have a unified strategy. You know, obviously this coming year will probably be pretty definitive on who gets to make those decisions. But I agree with you, DC. A lot of the stuff going on doesn't make sense to me.
Well, when I see things like Kingdom Come is suddenly a Black Label title, as if that matters somehow.
Yeah.
You know, I don't understand kind of what they're thinking in that regard. And what they're trying to do with the Black Label stuff. I mean, some of what they're doing, I particularly thought the Harleen series was really good. But trying to lump some past Elseworlds type stuff like Kingdom Come in with the Joker and some other stuff like that, it muddies the water.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it's they've gone out of the gate between that and the different physical formats for the material, really making the identity of the Black Label fairly murky. But that doesn't surprise me too much. It does disappoint me a bit, though.
Yeah, I think it's a case of, you know, for the whole last year, there's been just so much upheaval at DC in terms of, you know, I think they're smart enough to know that their current strategies aren't working. But, you know, there's an element of saving face. They don't want to completely abandon it. So they're trying to shoehorn different things into different categories. And just their overall organization doesn't quite make sense on a lot of different levels.
Yeah, what worries me is we've also got these rumors of 5G and how there may be a serious upheaval within the story content of DC. And I do think there is a bit of a need for some of that, but there's also a risk in some of that. Because I don't see anything here that makes me think this is something that proves they know what to do if they were given the free rein or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there have been times in the past where, like really around the time the New 52 was coming up, the Young Justice cartoon was a season or two in and really strong. It had a solid take on the DC universe and one that I thought was a model they actually could have and should have potentially leveraged for the New 52. Turns out not what they did, but I'm not seeing anything at the moment that makes me think that they're stuck with kind of a legacy continuity or inertia to overcome, and if they could just free themselves of that, they would do fine. You know, and you look at when they do the New 52, within short order, they had a couple of radically different takes on a couple of the characters. Green Arrow is a great example of that. They mm-hmm. went in a few different directions in the first year or two or three of the New 52. which is surprising given how much that is floundered and that title is long since gone, whereas the Arrow character really spawned off an entire, you know, multiverse of TV shows on the CW and a few other places. So it's not that the character is flawed. It's a matter of either they don't have the right take or know what to do with it.
Yeah. I think that, you know, I don't follow it as closely as you do, because I'm not as invested in superhero comics, but I think that you're seeing the consequences of a general lack of clear leadership in terms of who's in charge. And that may be because people are paralyzed in making long-term strategic decisions based on they don't know if they're going to be in the same position as, you know, the new owners evaluate, you know, things going forward. And so then because you don't have clear leadership and who's going to be in charge and who is empowered to make decisive decisions, then you don't get decisive decisions being made, or you get people switching tracks 2 months into something that's new. And so until that all gets settled, I don't know if there's anyone going to be able to execute on a clear plan that will allow creators and editors to move forward with a clear thinking. And so right now it's like they're throwing a lot of stuff against the wall to see what sticks. And you're seeing that, you know, within the current market, that can be problematic.
Yet we're seeing rumors of a 5G retooling that would move us to a new generation of characters and take our current ones and kick them as kind of elder statesmen.
Well, I have no problem with trying new things, but I just feel like at the big two, there's so much inertia and momentum of the people that actually buy the comics wanting those characters that is a huge risk.
I think it's a bigger problem than that. I don't think it's even the people who are buying those characters and stuff like that. About 20 plus years ago, when I was still working in San Diego, there was the Electric Blue Superman was what they were currently going with. Mm-hmm. And it was a nice looking costume or whatever, and there was one cover that was just him on a white background or whatever, and I was able to either scan that in or find the image online and turn that into a desktop for my computer. So I did that at work just so I'd have something to look at when I was between tasks or whatever. And at one point, a coworker came over and, you know, who the hell is that kind of a thing? And I'm like, well, that's Superman. He's like, oh, no, that's not Superman. You know, Superman looks like, and gave the classic description or whatever. It's like, no, I read the comic. That's Superman. No, it's not. That's kind of the inertia they're fighting against. And uh-huh. It's like, why fight against it? You know, if you want to do something like Immortal Hulk, which is taking the story in a new direction, but it's still recognizably the same Hulk character that we've always known and is accessible to people who come in, be it from the old TV show or the new modern, you know, Marvel cinematic movies and such. Mm-hmm. That's not a bad approach. But when you go and say, you know, let's go flip out who's Thor, who's Iron Man, etc., that's where I think you start getting that dissonance between what they're saying is the character and what people kind of know is the character.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with the 5G stuff, that's the backlash they're almost inevitably going to hit, and I don't see how they can get around that. So if they're at a point where they think they're going to have potential new marching orders from the higher-ups and the corporate conglomerate or what have you, I would say stabilize what you got. Don't try to do this major rocking of the boat, because if they do something like 5G, which, again, a rumor, maybe they aren't going to do it, but there's a lot of indications that they will. If the new higher ups say, no, that's a bad direction, and now they've got to kind of reboot from that, that puts them in a bad situation moving forward. And even if the higher ups are, you know, all behind it and stuff, if for whatever reason it doesn't go well, within a decade of having done the new 52 reboot, followed by the major retooling of Rebirth, and now, you know, whatever you want to take out of Doomsday Clock, there comes a point of just make up your mind, pick something and stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I think Marvel has an inherent advantage, because they've played fast and loose with their timeline and stuff. They've shifted, you know, which war Iron Man became Iron Man in and stuff. But generally speaking, everything from the early heydays of the Marvel Universe with Stan and Jack and stuff through today pretty much holds water. You know, you may downplay a few things, you may kind of ignore a few things, but it's not like there's this whole decades-long run of a character that just can't work in the current continuity, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I think that may be, between that and the demise of Vertigo, some of why we're seeing a stronger presence from Marvel on the trades list than we have in many years past. They've just got more relevant back stuff to put on the list.
Mm-hmm.
And even when they're doing kind of new, almost experimental stories like the Spider-Man Life Story and stuff, it's clicking with readers and getting some decent buzz. So I think they've just got a better strategy for what they're publishing and why. And I'm expecting, just based on what I'm seeing now, you know, at the beginning of 2020, I would expect to see more Marvel stuff at the top of the year-end list for 2020 than DC stuff. Now, granted, the year has just started and things could change radically, you know, in short order, but just based on past experience, I'm not as confident in that as I'd like to be.
Oh, no, I completely agree. I think, you know, not that I'm a fan of a lot of the decisions Marvel makes, but they're, you know, consistently executing on their plan, you know, and that is leading, you know, there are a number of exciting things that are happening in their books, and that's leading to sales. And those, you know, that's, you know, evident in the sales chart. So I think I agree with you. I think I would expect that trend to continue in terms of more sales for Marvel.
Well, I think there's also something about their plans not having an underlying assumption of previous mistakes having been made. There's an aspect of the new 52 and Rebirth of, well, we screwed up and we gotta do something drastic to fix the mess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that's the undercurrent of decisions over at Marvel. And it's funny because the powers that be at DC have been in their seats for, what, 12, 15 years?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like they're picking up somebody else's mess.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I would like to see in the 2020 list a lot more stuff over the 10,000 unit mark. Not expecting that, but I'd like to see it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and definitely considering cumulative sales, it is tough, though, because if we have a lot more months where things just start out at the 3,000 to 4,000 level like we did in December, and, you know, then, you know, the reorder activity is generally much lower, you know, it's going to be pretty tough to get up to the 10,000 mark.
Well, let's say you do 1,000 units a month of reorder activity, which is aggressive, but that puts you well over the 10,000 units. So
yeah, that is true, but I almost wonder with, you know, the numbers we're seeing for your order, if it's anything that's not a top line title like Batman or Saga, you're looking at maybe like 500 units a month.
That's true. But I think that goes back to not having many top line titles. And I think, you know, Image is kind of out of those at the moment with Saga on hiatus and Walking Dead ended. The, you know, we saw some good sales in 2019 for Spawn around issue 300, but there's no reason to expect that to continue since it's already cooled down significantly on the monthly side. Now, we may see a blip on that on the trade side in 2020, but I don't know. But at Marvel and DC, I mean, Marvel's potentially positioned well unless the individual issue collections, you know, the issue ones, issue two collections of the Dawn of X titles, depletes sales for the regular collected editions of X-Men, New Mutants, etc. You know, do they fracture their market by doing that? You know, otherwise, I would expect to see Dawn of X titles doing pretty well at the end of 2020.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
But I do think that experiment is worth doing, even if it does splinter the sales, because it could get it into more hands and be a bit of an entry point. Because if you can, as a retailer, hand somebody 1 week House of X, Powers of X, they come back all excited with that but not knowing where to go next, and you can hand them that first trade of all the first issues, it's a pretty powerful sales tool. But we'll see how all that works out.
Yeah, it's kind of the wait and see approach, right?
Yeah. If we filter the list to just DC for a second, again, we see a lot of stuff at the top of the list being either Batman-centric titles, a couple of again, the darker Black Label type stuff, like Batman Damned, Joker, things of that sort. Or, you know, one or two, again, kid-friendly type stuff, like the Ravens from DC Inc. But really, once we get out of kind of that sort of stuff, I mean, Heroes in Crisis doesn't even hit the list until rank 104 and only with 5,000 units, which I'm okay with because I didn't think it was particularly great, but that's just me.
Mm-hmm.
But then we hit more Batman-type stuff, Superman thing or two. I'm just trying to see when we start hitting, I don't say the bread and butter, but the other titles of the DC universe. And at that point, we're starting to get under the 3,000-4,000 unit mark, which is essentially they popped up on the list potentially once, and that was it.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I'm scrolling down to see, and a lot of it is just kind of the one-off stuff, like Batman Flash the Button. You know what I mean? It's not like you're, you know, volume four of us of an ongoing series kind of thing.
Yeah, it would be interesting with the Button in particular to line up the sales of the different things of kind of the meta arc for DC and see how those played out. Everything from the Rebirth hardcover to the Button to, you know, we've got Doomsday Clock Volume 1 and stuff on here already, to see if there is continued sales on that meta arc or not. And I don't know that it would have that kind of a trend like a regular title, just because they're doing it in so many bits and pieces across such a stretch of time.
Mm-hmm.
If we flip the list over to Marvel for a second, just to see how that kind of compares, we see something, you know, strikingly different. We see a couple of, you know, House of X, Powers of X, or Infinity Gauntlet, or Spider-Geddon, those kinds of stories high on the list as you would expect. We also see a couple of the Immortal Hulk trades on the list. Matter of fact, all four of them placing pretty well.
Yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to highlight, is to seeing that consistent sales. You know, obviously the number one trade being the highest, but you see all of the trades on there in the top.
Yeah, that definitely speaks to a successful new title launched for them. We got some Venom there from Donny Cates, Spider-Man by Nick Spencer, Miles Morales, the Thanos Infinity ending, Infinity Wars. So again, a couple of different characters showing up. It's not like, again, we've just got this one that's kind of dominating, as we've got kind of with the Batman stuff over at DC.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not too long before we start hitting the what they could have done in a single month of strong sales for a trade on this side. But again, I think that goes back to just how many of these there are.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just the sheer availability of material.
Yeah. I mean, are we at the point where we've simply got too many collected editions coming out too quickly?
You know, that's a good question. It's a catch 22 though, because they don't have the, I would worry if they tried to delay them more, you know, or space them out more, because we've talked about how it's the reader's attention is ephemeral and they just move on to the next thing. You know what I mean? So it's like, and part of the revenue model for all these series is there's a baked in assumption of collected edition contribution. So, you know, they kind of have to put them out, and you know, do they put them out quicker? Do they delay them? If they delay them, do people completely forget about it? You know, you need that revenue to continue the series. You know, it's not an easy calculus.
No, it's not, because like you said, a lot of these titles are reliant on the income from these trades. And if you were to announce up front you're going to do a mini series for whatever character, and you're not planning on collecting it to trade, would that just be seen as a lack of faith in the material or scare tactics to get people to buy the issue? And would that even work? Or are you just leaving money on the table? Since you've spent the money to put the issue together, you may as well do the trade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and nowadays, I think, I mean, absolutely on the creator-owned side, and I'm sure, you know, in the spreadsheet of profit-loss at the big two, there has to be a component of this series makes financial sense to greenlight because we're going to get a certain percentage of it from digital and a certain percentage of it from the collected edition. That's just part of the reality of it. So I think it's almost like you've locked yourself into having to have them. You know, I know they had some digital first series that they had. You know, I don't know if they initially had those. We'll do a collection if it's successful or not. But it's almost like in the modern market, you have to have a collected edition because that's the only way to make the math work.
I would think when they first started doing the direct to digital stuff that it was approved based on the, yeah, we don't know how this is going to do in digital, but we're going to do it in a format where we can take two or three of them, collect them to single issue, guaranteed to get some money there, collect those to trade, guaranteed to get this kind of expectation there, and then again to hardcover over there. So adding that almost preceding fourth dip,
mm-hmm,
probably made those easy to green light. But, and I wasn't paying enough attention as to exactly when these things kind of stopped, if it was 2018 or 2019, but I mean, really, I can't think of anything at the moment that is direct to digital the way Scooby-Doo Team-Up was, which may have been one of the last ones at DC to end, or the Injustice stuff, or they did a Fables spinoff, or what else did they do? The DC Bombshells and a few things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So if that model of direct to digital, collect to comic, to trade, to hardcover was really successful, would we not be seeing more things that way?
Yeah, no, I would expect to too, and you're absolutely right. There was a lot of fanfare when they were publishing those, and then they've definitely fallen off. I can't remember any ones that are currently being published right now, you know?
And I'm not sure if the DC Superheroes Girl, which I know at one point had been going digital first, is still doing that or not. I think it may have just flipped over to a digest format.
Gotcha.
So if that's the case, that's unfortunate, because I do think that path has a lot going for it. I think writing in the shorter installments for digital counterbalances the negative story trends we see with writing for the trade, because, you know, hey, if I'm writing for the trade, I've got six issues, I can take my leisurely time to write a story, and it'll, as long as it all pays off by that sixth issue, it doesn't matter how boring it is in the intervening parts.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're writing it of, hey, if this doesn't sell that next digital issue, I don't get to the end of the story, you've got to write a tighter, more focused story.
And oh, absolutely.
It can meander, but every so many pages, it's got to come together and justify itself. So I would like to see that kind of trend continue. I'm just, again, not seeing that really happening. If we take Marvel and DC off the list, we see, I think, a lot of the titles up near the top that you would expect. Saga, Walking Dead, Paper Girls, Monstrous, Umbrella Academy. I don't think that's a surprise really to anybody. Trying to see if there's any that are particularly surprising. Actually, the one I'm looking for and not seeing is, I was curious how Chrononauts fared up on the monthly list, if it even made the monthly list.
The collected edition? Oh, you mean the single issues or the collected edition?
The collected for the Future Shock. Because that was one where they dumped the whole release out at once, and they have since done a collected edition, haven't they? Maybe it's not out yet.
It may not be out yet, but I'm not sure.
Okay. We do have a few things that are direct to collected edition here on the list at rank 99. We've got They Called Us Enemies by George Takei about the internment camps. So not all of these things are simply collected editions of previously published material.
Yeah, so like that would be an OGN almost.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I would like to see more of those, and it used to be that DC and Marvel did one or two a year, everything back from the JLA Earth 2 one, you know, on up and down, but we're not really seeing that trend as often either.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to me, that's why I keep going back to the monthly comic sales. Whether you read the monthly comics or not, they are a good barometer of where the industry is heading, because they're a leading indicator of what you're going to get collected, because most of what's collected is previously published material.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's not working there, it's not going to show up over here. And if it does work there, like, again, the House of X, Powers of X, that's where you see some really strong sales on the trade side. So were there any other either titles or trends that jumped out at you that either looked interesting or that you've got questions on?
You know, I'm just seeing like an overall, you know, there's quite a bit of Image Comics, which is good in the sense that I'm excited that the creators that are going to be reaping the most rewards, you know, there's good representation on this list. You know, I just wonder though, you know, when I see these numbers, I have to remember that they're averaged out for a whole year. So
they're summed for a whole year.
Yeah. Summed for a whole year. I'm sorry. And, just thinking about, you know, you see the regular creators that we always see at the top that have, you know, one or more ongoing series, like the Brian K. Vaughan with Saga and Paper Girls. And then, you know, much lower on the list, you see some of the one-off series. And, you know, it's just one of the things I thought about a lot this year at Image was just how much harder it seems to be for them to be able to get any series to get past one or two trades that isn't made by one of the creators that already has kind of a following. I just think that this year, for me, really emphasized that Image is having a much harder time getting new creators, getting them off the ground and getting them in a sustainable career.
I would agree with that. With the new process, I did a breakdown of the top 300 best-selling trades for the year by writer. Mm-hmm. Unsurprisingly, the winning writer was Unknown Writer, because I only have that data going back to 2008-ish. So mm-hmm. anything older than that, like Watchmen, doesn't get properly credited. But the actual writer that topped the list, based on what I could identify, was Brian K. Vaughan, with 20 items and 145,571 units, which is only about 4,000 units below Unknown Writer.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, he's Brian K. Vaughan's almost as good as an Unknown Writer.
The aggregate of everyone else, right?
Yeah, but Scott Snyder was the next rung down with 58,961 units, which is a far cry from the 145,000 plus of Brian K. Vaughan.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it just comes down to where do these things place on the list? Because again, I was only looking at the top 300 for this, so I could do year-to-year comparisons going further back.
Uh-huh.
And I think last year, Brian K. Vaughan actually beat out Unknown Writer, although I'm not entirely sure by how much. I think it would have been maybe, you know, 20,000 units or something. So it's interesting to see how it splits by writer, but I also think we're at the point where, yeah, there wasn't any breakout project or breakout writer this year that just kind of took things by storm and really surprised everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not bad, because we've seen a lot of people carrying over from past work. Again, Immortal Hulk's a good example of that. The tail end of Walking Dead ended a lengthy run for Kirkman. He'd been on that title for eons. And he was actually the number five writer this year. And I think that was actually up a little bit from the previous year.
Gotcha.
So, you know, when you start to look at it through that lens, again, there's no one writer on the trade side other than Brian K. Vaughan that was really kind of dominating and stuff. Whereas, you know, Hickman, of course, had a really good year on the comics side with House of X, Powers of X.
And it's just a matter of time before, you know, the collected editions kind of filter through, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, one interesting thing I wanted to bring up, you kind of sparked my memory with the Scott Snyder, is I find it interesting, you know, this is my opinion, and maybe you can kind of correct me since you pay more attention to the kind of like the way that DC is flowing is, you know, he had his time with Greg Capullo on Batman. And then when his time ended on Batman and Tom King was, you know, in ascendance, at least at that time, I kind of felt like Scott Snyder had fallen off. You know, he had a separate series like Witches and stuff, his creator own things. But I don't remember seeing his name as relevant. And then as Tom King's either his writing faltered or the people who were buying the comics, they weren't exactly vibing with it. I felt like he kind of had this resurgence. But there's this kind of general theme of that, you know, Scott Snyder has a particular take on comics, and it's sometimes a little bit darker, but he was kind of given more work with the Justice League, and then he's kind of come back into the fore. And I'm wondering what your opinion on that is because I kind of felt like, you know, at the big two, you kind of see like writers like Brian Michael Bendis or Jason Aaron, they have their run, and then almost like, you know, if Stan Lee can be replaced, anyone can be replaced, and everyone eventually their run ends, you know what I mean? And it was interesting to see kind of Scott Snyder come back. Was that because he was doing stuff outside comics, or do you think they just realized, well, he was successful, so we'll give him another shot at stuff? What do you think?
I don't think he really went away.
Okay.
Because he had been doing things like the Dark Knight Metal stuff.
Okay, so he was doing the metal stuff. Okay.
He's been doing Justice League for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And that had gotten to where it was almost an ongoing event title.
Okay.
I mean, that's what led up to the whole, you know, Year of the Villain stuff, which is a lot thematically like the Forever Evil stuff from, what, 5-6 years ago or what have you.
Well, yeah, and it may have been that I just, at once he got off the main Batman title, I kind of stopped paying attention. And once I wasn't paying attention, I didn't notice that he was doing those other projects. You know, maybe that was it.
So. It absolutely happens with me. It's easy to lose track of all the different writers and such, because just in these top 500 items, I was able to, or my system was able to identify, let's see, 129 different writers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's everything going back to, you know, Bill Finger and you know, Chris Claremont's, I mean, some people who've had legendary impact on the medium, all the way to, you know, more recent creators that are arguably still kind of breaking in.
Mm-hmm.
So I've still got to do a little bit of cleanup on that process, because I'm pretty sure one, I don't know, maybe that is an actual writer. I just don't know who that one is. And we've got various listed, and which of course is a very popular one, and a few things like that.
Yeah, it's you know what would be interesting to see, and I don't know how far back your data goes in terms of the years. It would be interesting to see a column comparison, and let's just like set the parameters: the top 300 for the year-end chart of things with reorder activity, or versus things that this was their. Well, I guess that would be hard, because if they came out in January, they'd obviously have reorder activity. Like, just like one-off things to see if there's this general trend, and that we could then say it's we're just not seeing things catch on and stay. Of this is stuff that was consistently reordered throughout the year, and it's an old title, versus this is a relatively new title that had, you know, is actually selling well. You know, just to see if we can we could see that trend, and then be able to compare it from year to year to see, you know. In the top 300 for the year, there was 150 new items that were just reorder activity of old material. And then the next year, it's 100. And the next year, it's 50. And the next, you know what I mean? So you're seeing that trend of things not being able to break through and stay in the market. And we are seeing the companies not being able to bring new ideas and actually continuously sell them. But I don't know if that's a good measurement of that.
Well, one of the ideas I was playing with on the comic side and haven't finished there and therefore haven't brought over to the trade side was breaking down the sales into what was the first month sales, what was obviously this month's sales, what was last month's sales, what was the sales between after the first month before last month, and then what are the total sales?
Yeah.
Figuring at any given point for any item, you would want to know, okay, here's what it sold this month, so it's relevant to the discussion in a monthly basis, versus being able to compare, okay, this trade of say volume 11 of Batman, how is its first month sales compared to the first month sales of volume 10 or the other first month sales of all the other volumes, versus what are the accumulated volumes of everything?
Yeah.
And then, okay, last month is good to know, just so is it up or down from last month, or did it show up last month? You know, and it trying to figure out where those kind of buckets are.
Yeah. Well, and then it just gives you a sense of the velocity, and something that very, you know, something can start quickly, you know, start high and burn bright, but can burn out in 2 months, whereas something like Watchmen is consistent sales, even if sometimes it's not always in the high numbers. And, you know, we talked about in previous podcasts at the year end, we've talked about, so, you know, a series like Brian Wood's, the Viking series he used to do at Vertigo, where it wouldn't show up any one particular month, but the overall, it would show up on the year end sales because it was doing basically just enough sales right below the radar per month, but aggregate, it adds up, you know.
Well, DMZ was the classic
DMZ,
example.
DMZ, that's right, DMZ, yeah.
It would do like a third or two thirds of its sales under the radar of the top 300.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's part of why I try to have it calculate, here's how much that not only are we told it did on the year end with the index and stuff, but what are the unreported units?
Mm-hmm.
And there are a few cases where there's some noticeable unreported units. If I filter that real quickly, the ones we've got that have maybe 5,000 or more unreported units, and some of this just could be because of the way they keep renaming some of these things. Batman, The Killing Joke, new edition hardcover, Batman Hush trade paperback, Rick and Morty versus Dungeons and Dragon trade paperback volume 1, the DC poster portfolio for Stanley Art Germ Lau 1, and then Kingdom Come Black Label all seem to have some significant unreported units. What's interesting, and I haven't had a chance to chase down to figure out if this is legit or if it's maybe just an error in my process, I saw a couple that had a significant number of negative reported unreported units. Like they seem to have shown up higher or lower on the year-end list than the monthly total added up to.
Mm-hmm.
The DC Superhero Girl Out of the Bottle showed up that way with about 6,450 units that had been reported that didn't make the year-end list for some reason. Now, they re-released the year-end data like two or three times just because they had a couple of technical snafus or whatever. And maybe I thought I'd gotten the right version into everything. But I, again, just haven't had a chance to figure out what's really going on with that.
Yeah.
Because we see, like, the Under the Moon, a Catwoman tale showing up here with 6,204 units. And if we go to the monthly top trades data and filter that for that same title, we see that it showed up in May, June, and July. And it almost seems like I'm seeing a total there of 5,565. So it may just be that my new process is just not doing the math quite right. So that's good to know. Like I said, it's not quite ready to go, but overhauling the whole system is a bit of work.
Oh yeah. No, it's not something you can be expected. You can expect it to just work flawlessly either the first couple of goes.
No. And again, I've just gotten some of it written initially, much less I haven't even started vetting it. So it may take a little bit to get through, but it would allow for doing some of those kinds of comparisons that you were talking about. And I think having something that sums up the trades, having a tab on a monthly basis that could also be used for the year-end summary, which is just, boom, here are all the trades. For every one, here's its first month sales, intervening sales, last month's sales, this month's sales, and total sales. And a list of, here's its itemized history, how it sold each and every month it ever sold.
Mm-hmm.
Would give us that kind of a go-to thing of, well, okay, we want to go talk about, say, the history of Saga. Being able to filter that list of Saga, saying, boom, this is how those first month sales are trending. Here's how it was looking last month. Here's how much they've gathered in the meanwhile or what have you. But it comes down to what are the right kind of buckets to have to show up on a spreadsheet or something. Because you don't want to have one for every month because it's just going to scroll off to infinity. And it's just too much data to deal with. And then the question is, where is the right place to aggregate to? You know, is it worth doing it on a yearly basis? Is it not? I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So if you have ideas, if the listeners have ideas, I'd love to get some feedback and stuff and figure out what is a meaningful data set or whatnot on some of these things to have.
Mm-hmm.
So it's one of those things that on the trade side in particular and on the year-end side of the trades in the utmost, it's hard because they change up how they release the year-end data every time, and the trades, because they keep going back to the well on a new Batman Volume 1 or Captain America Volume 1 so often,
mm-hmm.
It's really hard to figure out how to clean this into a meaningful way.
Yeah. You know, for the collected editions, because they sell them in the bookstore market and the library market, don't they have to give them ISBNs, and everyone has a different ISBN?
They do have the ISBN, and I do have that on a few of the data feeds. I don't have it on all of them.
See, that's the tough part, because if all those are individual distinct numbers, then that would be a way to differentiate, you know what I mean? But if you don't have access to them for everything, it can muddle things.
I do, I think, use the ISBN to differentiate some of the trades to not, like, add up one volume of Young Justice to another volume.
Mm-hmm.
But if I don't have the ISBN, all of those look the same at that point.
Gotcha, yeah.
So there is a little bit of being at the mercy of the data I do and don't have, and certainly being at the mercy of a strong desire to not want to manually clean this data by hand.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And that just speaks to the amount of volume that's coming out. It's just not practical.
No. At one point, when I was doing these episodes with Chris Marshall, there was less data, and I had a little more time on my hands, and I was actually sometimes filling out some data of what were the component issues that, say, were in a Walking Dead trade, so I could do those kinds of comparisons.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't able to keep that data going.
Yeah.
So it lost relevance, and I've since kind of carved that off the system.
I hear you.
If I had a feed for that kind of data, I'd love to do that, because I'd love to be able to compare some of these things of, are we seeing, say, the same trend in first month sales of the trades for Saga that we saw for the component issues on the monthly side? I think that would be an interesting correlation to either make or prove doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be an interesting thing to look at. One of the other things that I, there's two other things that I kind of written down that I wanted to bring up. The first being that I'm noticing that there's more manga on this list than I remember seeing last year.
Yeah.
And that kind of tracks with my general, feeling that there's been an uptick in the sale of manga, which is good to see that back in the market, that diversity of product, that diversity of material. You know, a lot of it is, you know, quasi superhero ish kind of things, but there's a lot of it that's not. So I kind of like that variety coming back into the market. And then the other one was the relative success, you know, it's not gangbusters, but the relative success of the Amazon TV series, The Boys, and how it seems to have sold enough extra versions of the comic, the omnibuses or whatever from Dynamite to get them to bring Garth Ennis back to do more material and or, you know, at least they think that there's the potential for sales for that, you know. So we always talk about how the Marvel movies haven't necessarily moved the needle on, the Marvel comics, but it seems to be there's some general synergistic success of The Boys TV show, and it's at least generated interest at the level of the direct market of the retailers bringing in extra copies that the publisher is willing to try some new material, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good thing. I think the key difference there is The Boys had stopped being produced ages ago.
Yeah.
Whereas most of the stuff that's in the Marvel Cinematic Universe or the DC TV shows, they're still publishing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Even a few things where they hadn't been, we've gotten a new Runaways series that coincided roughly with the TV show on, I guess it was Hulu, and things like that. But the other difference is Dynamite, I think, is looking and needing kind of, again, another kind of breakout hit.
Mm-hmm.
And The Boys was definitely that for a while for them.
Yeah, and that's true. You're right. The Dynamite is obviously one of the smaller publishers, and you know, if there was ever a time when you could, you know, get this synergy of the other media helping you sell books, move numbers, then this would be the chance, since it's a pretty big platform to have the show on. And it's been pretty well reviewed, considering.
Well, and if we look at just Dynamite in the top 500 for the year, other than John Wick at rank 247, the only other thing they had was all six volumes of The Boys Omnibus in order.
Mm-hmm.
As if people were starting with number one and working their way through it.
Yeah.
And it went from 10,831 units for that first volume down to 2,315 units for that sixth volume. And I would expect it to drop off because not everyone, I mean, about half the people who got the first get the second. And then from there, mm-hmm. It trails off just because it takes a while to read an omnibus.
Oh, exactly. And that's what I was going to say, is those are pretty solid, thick books. And, you know, with decent MSRPs. So, you know, that's a pretty decent return for them in terms of the new revenue. So,
yeah. Now, one question I had for you when you brought up the manga stuff, when Diamond releases this information, they would do it in a couple of different lists, the top, you know, comics, the top trades, the top indie comics, the top indie trades, and the top manga.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the top indie comics and trades, they reference not only the list within that, but also the corresponding for the overall. So whenever I've got like the top 500 and then a couple of things sprinkled beneath it, those are the things that were in the indie list that were not in the top comics or trades list.
Okay.
Now, on the manga side, they do the same thing where I get like for the year end, the top 100 manga, and it says, well, here's its overall rank or something. So if we go to rank 25 with My Hero Academia graphic novel volume 1,
mm-hmm.
That's, you know, the top item on the manga list as well. Now, maybe what I should be doing is using that to where I can tag what's manga, what's not on this list. But where things get a little confusing for me is there's a couple of items on the manga list that the overall quantity and dollar rankings are NA for some reason. And I need to ask the people at Diamond as to what's up with this. I just never remember to, because a lot of these tend to be from yen on, and not all of them though,
mm-hmm.
where it's at like rank 27 of the manga list. It's got an order index, so I could calculate the thing. Why did the stuff above or below it place on the top 500 trades list, but not that item, which in this case was Overlord light novel hardcover volume 11?
Oh, so, you know, it's interesting. You just, the light novel is maybe an interest of it, because they're actually, they are solicited in previews in the manga section, but what you have to understand is it's more of a novel with pictures. So not a picture book and not a comic, but this thing where there's illustrations throughout, but not what you would consider like a child's picture book where it's like two or three sentences and a picture on every page. It's more of like a novel.
It's an illustrated story, not a comic story.
Yeah, exactly. And when they say light novel, it's because it's usually like 150 to 200 pages, not 400 page novel. Do you know what I mean? So it's like longer than a novella. So it's considered a novel, but it's not, it's shorter than like a 400 page, 300 page average page novel. And then there's numerous illustrations in it.
So like the My Hero Academia School Breeze novel, softcover volume 1, illustrated novel, not an actual manga like a regular My Hero Academia.
Yeah. And I think the tough part is that in Japan and where they sell that stuff, they it's much easier for them because they're so immersed in the manga in general. They have a complete conception of what a light novel is. But when Previews is trying to sell it to the Western audience, if they put it in the book section, then you know how much less people go to that section to order. So it gets much less eyeballs. The sales would crater. So they put it in the manga section oftentimes because it has a title that has what the main manga title says. So people are going to be interested in checking that out. It's just almost more of like a marketing decision about if we put it here, we'll get 10,000 people looking at it. If we put it here, we'll get 1,000 people looking at it. You know,
that makes sense. What's puzzling is why it makes the manga list but doesn't make the trades list.
Yeah, that is weird, and I would definitely address that question to them. But yeah, the light novels are a little bit different product for sure.
All right, that sheds some light on it. No pun intended.
Yeah.
but that was something I hadn't realized. So that's interesting. Okay. Yeah. Again, I tend to, because they don't have those ranks, although I know roughly where they would go, I tend not to include them.
Yeah.
But at the very least, I think there's more I could do to leverage this list than I have been. And if I actually put the manga as a kind of full class citizen in the new process versus just kind of tacking it into the trades list in places, I could then tag which of these are manga and we could do some subsetting of that in the future, maybe.
Yeah. Well, and you know, one thing I've noticed in going through Previews over the last 2 years is that there's been more and more offerings of the light novels. So they're obviously selling well. I don't know that they're selling well in the direct market, but you know, that's what that catalog is primarily devoted to. So if the publishers are continuing to offer that material and they're offering more and more of it, I would assume that's because there's been more and more sales of it. So
it certainly stands to reason. If it's not working, you don't do it. So if you're doing it must be working to a degree.
Yeah, and some of those sales are obviously going to be in places like Barnes & Noble, because when I go into my local Barnes & Noble, there's, you know, of the section they have graphic novels and stuff, there's quite a bit of the section that's devoted to manga, and of course, mixed in there is the light novel section too. So, you know, it's kind of like a subcategory of manga that in the Western world is still, you know, filed in that same section when people are trying to sell it, you know.
I don't go to bookstores as much as I used to. Back when I was in college and freshly out, I was going on a weekly basis. Uh-huh. These days, a few times a year, maybe. And I was in one about a week or so back, and it was interesting because I was looking at the sci-fi novels. Mm-hmm. And back when I was, you know, traveling a lot, I was going through the Star Trek novels at a quick pace. And they were, you know, a bookcase worth at least, if not two, at the bookstores.
Uh-huh.
Now they're doing good to have a shelf. And they're not coming out with any fewer of them. I think they're just maybe they're selling better digitally or something.
Uh-huh.
But using the bookcase for the manga section, the graphic novel section and stuff is just a physical barometer on how these things are selling in that mass market. It's not the best indicator, but it gives you a sense of what's worth offering to the people. And if it's selling, they're going to devote more space to it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Of course, the other thing I noticed is Barnes & Noble's turned into as much of a toy store as a bookstore.
Oh, absolutely. Like in that same section where they have it's like a quarter of the store, and so much of it is like knickknacks and things like that. Yeah.
And I'm not against that. I'm okay with it, but it was a bit of a difference than what I was used to.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So if we go to the bottom of the top 500 for the year, we bottom out in sales at 2,057 units, which isn't too bad. That's interesting because when we were looking at the December numbers, that would have placed maybe in the top 5 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you could place on the year-end list with literally just a good month of sales, which, again, to me is indicative of maybe we've got a few too many things coming out. But they're just leaving money on the table if they don't do it, so I get it.
Yeah, and then that's that kind of like the tragedy of the commons aspect of it, right? Like, they've got themselves cornered and they have to offer it to keep the revenue coming in, but at the same time, there's so much material coming out, so people buy, you know, less and less, or there's so many people buying and they spread their money out over more and more items, and it's just kind of almost this race to the bottom.
Yeah. I'm not sure what I would suggest for them. I do think the collected editions are a necessary part of the market,
mm-hmm.
but I think they need to handle them a little bit better than they have been. And I don't think they're getting the sales juice out of them that the monthly comics need to make the trades continue to be viable in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't think they're going away anytime soon, but we should have had a few more things doing a little higher and stuff than we did. And it would be nice to see a couple of more kind of both surprise breakout hits, but also some things that are more consistent sellers a few times. But given how the December numbers were looking, and again, no new Saga or Walking Dead, I'm curious, you know, what's the top single month sales going to be over the course of 2020? And then what's the top of this list going to look like for the aggregate sales over the year?
Oh, yeah, it is, you know, especially like you said, with a number of series of long running series ending and, you know, nothing that automatically jumps out at you that says, oh, this is going to be the thing that's going to carry things forward. It will be interesting to see what, you know, if we have to go with B and C hitters, we'll see what the totals are, right?
Well, if I'd look just at the first month sales of what's the new Undiscovered Country, I guess it was, by Charles Soule and Scott Snyder. On the monthly side, that first issue did 80,000-90,000 or something.
Mm-hmm.
That second issue did about 30,000 or 35,000.
Oh boy!
So pretty strong drop there. But who knows? Maybe that's something that will do well in trade.
Yeah, and those are pretty strong creators. So you would think that the audience that at least would take a look at it would be good. But you never know these days.
We're still in the honeymoon period. It could be by the time we see the sales on issue 4 or 5 that it starts to go up or something like that. It's just too early to tell.
Yeah, that's a good point.
On the price points, again, they were just kind of, you know, all over the place. We had a lot at in the top 300 at $9.99 with 54 items, which I think is good, followed by $16.99 with 44 items, $19.99 with 35 items. If we look at the price point that brought in the most money, it was $16.99 that brought in 3.8 million retail dollars, just a hair above what was brought in by the $24.99 price point. Of course, $24.99 price point needed 21 items to do it, whereas $16.99 price point needed the 44 items to do it. But just the $16.99, $9.99, and $19.99 price points accounted for 45% of the units and about 34-35% of the dollars, retail dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So the highest price point items on the list were at $125. And that was the Amazing Spider-Man Omnibus and the Conan Barbarian Original Marvel Years Omnibus at ranks, let's see, 276 and 292. Check one thing on those real quick. Yeah, it was volumes 1 and 2 of that, which isn't too surprising because I think some of that stuff hadn't been in print for quite some time. So I expect, again, those higher ticket items to do lower in sales, just they're priced higher because they're a bit more niche material.
Mm-hmm.
And because they're more expensive, fewer people buy them. Go figure. So all in all, I think it was okay sales for the year in terms of the top list here. Some of it, I think, did better because it had all year to accumulate some of these sales because it was older material, whereas some of these things that, again, like House of X, Powers of X, on the list one time and did pretty well.
Yeah, you know, I just think that we see this general trend where it becomes harder and harder for series to stick around. Some of the series and comics that we thought were going to be evergreens for quite a while are falling off much quicker than we thought. You know, the demise of Vertigo, I think, is you can see pretty clearly on these charts that the sales there just have dropped off pretty dramatically for that imprint. And, you know, DC, to my understanding, hasn't had a real answer to how to fix that or to replace it, or they're still scrambling to figure that out. So I think that's kind of one of the lessons that I've seen in the charts over the last year.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, not a single issue of Fables hit the year-end charts. We do still see Sandman on the list. That's not too surprising. But some things that at one point looked like they would just always be around while they were still being published, the minute they stop, it cools off.
Yeah. And I would even say for the Sandman comment, I think some of that is because they're, you know, obviously I think that material will always sell in a certain amount, partly the Neil Gaiman connection, partly because, you know, there's so much material, but they're still, you know, publishing relatively new material for that, like in the Sandman Universe Presents kind of thing.
And that acts as advertising for the older material.
Exactly. Exactly.
It would be interesting to take a look at the sales of the Sandman stuff in the intervening years to see how often they kind of showed up on the list and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's I think the tough part is it's almost like that old moving the goalpost thing, is that as the market fragments and, you know, the overall sales get distributed across more and more titles, it becomes so hard to make judgments, you know, based on like of relative sales, because everything else is just competing with so many more titles than the previous generations. You know, like, you know, each decade there's a different sales stratosphere and sales stratum.
Well, and every month there's another couple of hundred trades that you're now competing with that you weren't last month.
Exactly. Yeah. And there's still only so many hours in the day that people have to consume, and so they have to make choices, and, you know, there people are making choices and or completely forgetting about or never having heard of or seen it some material, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And I'd love to have some kind of way to do measurements on how many copies were printed. How many of these copies, which we can see this number here, were sold into stores, so we know that number. Mm-hmm. How many of them were actually bought by consumers, and then how many of that were actually read by the consumer?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because that goes back to a comment on efficiency, on, you know, how many copies are printed versus read. How are we doing on that as an industry? And it's just, there's no way to know. But that's one of those things where Comixology, the DC Universe app, the Marvel Comics app and stuff like that, in a digital format, they could actually be tracking how many people are checking these things out, how far into it are they reading, how quickly are they reading. I think there's a lot of data mining that could be done on that could lead to more engaging stories that lead to higher sales that could, in future years, really bump up this list.
That's true.
But not an easy task, and not one that I don't know if anyone's even working on it.
Yeah. I will be interested to see if I can't remember the name of the software program that has their new point of sale service that's gotten a number of stores to sign up for them, and they're going to be
Comics Hub.
And have they said that they're going to be releasing some of that actual sales through data or not?
I had seen one article. I forget if it was on ICV2 or where, but honestly, I hadn't had a chance to really dig in deep to it. But I do hope that they do some analysis and some stuff like that.
Yeah, because that might be, you know, obviously they don't, you know, they're a company that's looking for stores to purchase their POS system. But if they were able to ever have at least a small representative sample, and who knows, you know, then there'd be some arguments about, is it a representative sample? But any sort of data out of that on the actual sell-through would be very interesting, you know?
Absolutely. Sounds like a very interesting project, and one that I'd like to see if I could get a little more involved with.
Mm-hmm.
I went to their website, just didn't find any good contact information.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, you know, maybe in this new year, if there's any of that material that's available, be good to just look at, or even if they publish a report, you know, saying that this is what we've seen with our stores, and we have 200 stores that we have our stuff, you know, and even if they just gave the general vicinities, you know, is it all the stores on the East Coast, all the stores on the West Coast, then you could say, hey, you know, is this a representative sample? And then you could start at least comparing to what we know that Diamond invoiced and what we know that quote unquote was sold through. It'd just be interesting to think about that.
Yeah. Because if they were to give relative numbers, you know, as to what their total set sample set covers we would know how it stacks up to what the Marvel data or the Diamond data has and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be interesting. It's like, okay, they've got so many stores, and that accounts for either 10% of the overall sales for this title or 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And it would vary from title to title, and I think that would be interesting to know.
Yeah, no. So that's something I'm looking forward to. Maybe that'll be a new avenue to be like compare and contrast what we get from Diamond and what is actually people picking up their books. So we'll see.
Sounds good. So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it for 2019.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes 2 decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there is at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales, any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels and collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any items sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ath, Ogden, English language itself, you work very differently there.